Welcome into Sunday Golds. Aria Masudi and Brett Nevitt back here. Our second podcast of the week. The date is Wednesday, May 15th, and Florida State getting ready to play its final regular season weekend of baseball. And this time of year, you start flipping the page over to postseason and regional picture, super regional picture. And I think Brett and I will get into that more next week as the Noles go to Charlotte to play in the ACC tournament. But certainly right now, this team struggling a little bit to find their mojo. Brett, you were there last night in DeLand. I do want to shout out all the Seminole fans that I watched make the trip to watch that game against the Hatters, and felt like a home game. And I'm sure a lot of those guys, you know, listen to Sunday Golds and appreciate the Central Florida Noles making their presence felt. Unfortunately, I know you didn't get to watch a game in which FSU played particularly well. It has been a really long week for those guys, and Brett right now just not clicking and firing on all cylinders. They lost 10-5 to the Hatters, and Link joined us earlier today and talked to a bunch of the media members about, you know, just a couple of different hardships that the group has had to go through, as well as overall where his group is at right now as we get into the Georgia Tech series.
Yeah, I think it's a group that's pretty both mentally and physically fatigued. Link talked about it a little bit with me after the game yesterday in Stetson, and then some more. He went into detail a good bit today about just the travel to get there. And I'm sure some of you have seen Lulu's thread as well on Twitter for some of the stuff that they went through trying to get there, not being able to get out of town Thursday, and then dealing with the storms early on Friday before leaving, and then not knowing about a lot of their apartments and stuff like that. You know, Link also said that, you know, that's something that they got to be able to try to just power through and, you know, just try to respond to it. Like, they've responded so much this year, but I think when you just get this late into the year, sometimes it can be a little bit harder. And it's definitely a group that I think is ready for an off day at home today, but you got to bounce right back into a Georgia Tech series. So it's a grind, but that's why these seasons are so long, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's how you figure out who the best teams are. And right now it's not going too well for Florida State, but you know, still some time to regroup, and the team's been really good at home this year. So maybe you can finish it off with another good weekend at home, and you'll still be in pretty good standing for everything. But I think it's certainly a group that is quite mentally fatigued right now, and a group that is dealing with some guys that are banged up and have been dealing with banged up arms for a while. But so yeah, you're just trying to get to the end of this season, and right now it's a bit of a limp to the finish line.
What are some themes that have jumped out at you over the last 4 or 5 games for this team that caused concern, or that you hadn't been seeing earlier in the season?
Well, I think with the arms, I think we're just getting to the point that there's some – the guys that had pitched for really well for a while, some of those guys are getting to points of the year that they've never got to before when it comes to the volume of throwing, and just the amount that they've had to throw recently with the guys being out, and you've relied on some of the same guys over and over again because you've had to, because of the lack of success from a lot of other pitchers. So like I mentioned on the last podcast, you're just not getting anything from the right side of the mound, really. Like, you're struggling to find answers on the right side of the mound. And a lot of that's because your top three right-handed pitchers and top four, if you include Gavin Adams, you know, injury that he suffered before ever even throwing an inning in the regular season. Like, you're down your top four right-handed pitchers, and you just recently got two of those guys back. But, you know, Witt gave up the back-to-back homers when he came in right away. I still think the stuff looks okay and fine for Whitaker. Ben is still trying to find it and figure it out. And Leiter, Link mentioned today that he was out throwing in the outfield and doing some work, but he's still a little bit of a ways away. So you just don't really have anything on the right side of the mound right now. And when other guys have had to throw for so long, they're starting to get to the point when they're wearing down. And offensively, you're getting a little thinned down, and I think you're also starting to press a little bit, which is leading to base running mistakes that we hadn't seen for a lot of this year. Like, it wasn't a super amazing base running team, but it also wasn't a team that ran into outs like they have recently, both at Pitt And yesterday at Stetson was probably the worst base running showing of the year. I mean, they ran into 3 outs in the bases. That's given away a whole inning worth of outs. So it just make life harder on yourself. And I think the defense has still been fine for the most part, but it's just, you just don't have depth in the arms right now. And you don't have a ton of depth in the lineup right now either. And when Jaime is banged up like he has been, and you don't really know exactly what's going on there, it makes you worry a little bit more about the lineup too. But you just have to wait and see with Jaime. They said he's getting diagnostic work done today, mostly precautionary, but they're still kind of in wait and see mode on that until this afternoon.
You know, I thought, Brett, you really sensed the absence there from Jaime over the last couple of games, you know, and the offense definitely needs him. And we've talked about how if the pitching staff is kind of skating by right now, that you need the offense to carry the day a lot of the times and be able to be the catalyst for you. And I just think you need all your horses, right? And you need guys like Jaime in there. I thought Jordan Williams has filled in admirably. I actually think he has shown you that he can be someone that steps in and gets the job done, and had a big moment there against Stetson in the middle innings with the RBI base hit. And he's played some really good defense and left as well. And you've documented his ability to steal bases and wreak havoc on the base paths, but you do need all your guys because, you know, your 1-6, I think, is where you make your money as a lineup. And that includes and requires having a Jaime Ferrer available with the power, the average, his ability to drive in runs. So definitely something we're going to monitor. Link said, like you just mentioned that may not be something that we have available to Florida State this weekend is having Jaime, but you know, they're going to do those tests and see if he can give it a go, then he will. Stetson was a tough one. I haven't seen a team give up 6 home runs like that to a group that doesn't really hit home runs. That was surprising. The pitching wasn't that surprising for me overall. I mean, you give up 10, not a good day, but you know, I thought Tejeda continues to show you some ability there to get you outs. I thought Rowan had a pretty positive inning of work against the Hatters late. But the pitching staff is what it is, right? Like at this point, there's nothing for you and I to diagnose or analyze or break down. Like they are what they are. And you have a true star in Jamie Arnold and Dorsey, who has pitched very well for you for a long stretch. And then, you know, maybe one or two bullpen arms right now that you really feel solid about to kind of get the job done. But Stetson, I don't know if I really want to analyze a whole lot more from that game. It was a midweek game on a Tuesday, and you don't really learn a lot from those no matter what. I took away that this team really needs to get home and be able to play in its backyard. Shout out to the crews and to everyone who's been working hard to make Hauser playable for the weekend. That is major and so much gratitude for you guys. A 10-foot fence against Georgia Tech. That is what they'll be able to do. So, you know, that's half the size of what it normally is, but both teams are going to get to play with that. That's not an advantage or a disadvantage for anyone. You just might see a couple more balls leave the park. And Brett, you and I might have some flashbacks to Wake Forest and Clemson at times with the way some of these balls might carry at Hauser this weekend. But those were my takeaways from talking to Link earlier today. Brett, was there anything else that he said that stood out to you before we move into talking to Eric Llewellyn and previewing Georgia Tech?
Yeah, I was just going to add a bit more on the Stetson game and just the swings of that sixth inning and seventh inning there. I mean, you come back, you tie the game in the sixth with a 3-run spot. And then you leave the go-ahead run on third base. And after that, you give up a leadoff home run to begin the next inning. And you get an out, and then I think you go hit, and it's in a walk, and then another walk, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're down 9-4. And then the next inning, you load the bases with no outs, and you strike out while getting a runner picked off first by the catcher for the second out, and the next batter pops out, and you get nothing out of that. And then you also give up, I believe, another home run in the bottom of the seventh. So just those momentum swings there at Stetson, that was just, it was just not good. Not good control of the game by the guys in the field and game management. But Stetson, for some reason, has been such a disastrous place for FSU to play at the last few times. I mean, the last couple of times I've been there, I think the last two times before this trip, FSU had been no hit through the first seven innings. And in one of those games, they did get no hit. You scored five more runs yesterday than you had scored in the last two trips to Stetson combined. Like, you've lost the last three games there. For some reason, it's just a really, really tough place for FSU to go play. And for it to be in the line final week of the year, and for you to have to turn around and then go play a Thursday series after driving home four and a half hours on the bus last night, probably not getting back till 1:30 a.m. after already being on the road since last Friday. And I think Link said 15 of the guys had to stay at hotels last night. It's just not a good situation right now. It's some of it's unlucky, some of it's done by yourself, but it's just no part of it right now feels like good vibes. It just doesn't feel like in a good spot, but you have an opportunity to turn it around this weekend. And like you said, the 10-foot fence, that should be interesting. Link didn't sound like he didn't think it would make too much of a difference, just with like the trajectory of the balls and stuff. But I'm sure there will be a couple balls that go out that we think that maybe they wouldn't have gone out with a normal fence. But you got to do what you got to do to play games at Hauser, and you want those last three at Hauser. And obviously, really excited to get back there tomorrow. So we'll just see. Obviously, there's three more games. I think Baseball America has you number seven right now, still as a national seed. I was watching D1 Baseball's Nerdcast, and I think they actually had FSU number nine with Wake Forest at number eight, which is, I think, how you and I feel right now, just coming off last weekend with Wake sweeping Clemson and them having the head-to-head win over you. So you're still right there between 7 and 9, 7, 9, 7, 8, 9, 10. Like, you're still in that mix. So if you go and win a series this weekend, you're going to give yourself a chance to still host to still have a national seed if you have a strong showing in the ACC tournament as well, I think.
No, that's good perspective, Brett. And I think if you had told me in January in the preseason going into the final weekend, you'd be 37-13 and in the top 10.
Jumping for joy if you had told us
right.
That.
Yeah. And so I had to remind myself last night that you know, it is peaks and valleys. These seasons are long. That is why we treat it as such and not like a football season where every game definitely impacts, you know, your postseason perspective and your prospects there. So you just hope that at some point the valley turns into a peak and that it happens at the right time. And I remind Noles fans that we've seen FSU teams in the past really limp to the finish only to get hot in the postseason. And we've seen it the other way around too, where they get really hot to end the month of May and it does not carry over into June. So kind of hoping that's the same way there, but you're still in the thick of it right now in the ACC standings. I think getting a top four is crucial, and playing at home at Georgia Tech with your crowd there, you hope that everybody kind of rises to the occasion and is able to get you two out of three against the Jackets. And with that being said, let's get to our interview here and the spotlight portion of Sunday Gold. It's trying to get more guys on the show, and Alumni Hall has been so kind in sponsoring this and helping us make it possible. But the voice of Florida State baseball, you know him well, Eric Llewellyn. Lulu, beloved amongst the community, has been doing this for a while, is the voice of the Noles, and someone who means a lot to both myself and Brett, kind enough to join us here on Sunday Golds to give his thoughts on the season and moving forward.
Lulu, first of all, I think you just got back to Tallahassee last night. Just one.
Technically this morning, but yes.
Yes, good point. And just how is everything there for you since getting back and things all good? I know a lot of the guys are staying in hotels right now, but for you, just how's everything doing back in Tallahassee?
Everything's fine for me personally. My power came back on Sunday, and my son was constantly checking to see what was going on and keep an eye on the house and that kind of thing. I mean, probably an ulterior motive because he wanted internet, but yeah. But no, we did fine. And picked the dog up today, and he's exhausted from the time at puppy camp. But yeah, you talk about the players, and I think it was Monday morning. As of Monday morning, I believe there were still 30 guys that didn't have power, and obviously they were at the time we were leaving Pittsburgh and heading to Orlando. to go down and play the Stetson game. But at that time, it was 30 guys that didn't have power. I know it was still even going to be more than half of them by the end of that day they were expecting. And then I heard, like you said, that some of them are in hotels now because they just that they don't have power. So, it's a lot to come back to. It could have been a lot worse where I am. Fortunately, I'm in a part of town that didn't get it that bad. I had to drive to my office today and had to I usually go down Blairstone to do that and drove by Hyland Golf Course in that area. And I know that tornado went through Myers Park and Indian Head Acres and across Blairstone and the golf club there at Hyland. I know it hit Capital City Country Club as well. And it just, what I saw was just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. And you put the thread out there on Twitter about the team's travel. And I'm sure most people who listen to this podcast have probably seen that by now, but just one, that trip by itself, just how crazy was it? But also just this year and all the weather delays and the changes in some trips and stuff, like how crazy of a year has this been for scheduling and everything like that and travel for you and the team compared to some years in the past?
Well, it's really, this trip was really something else because, I mean, I've never traveled on the day of a game.
Mm-hmm.
And the team, we were supposed to fly out around 2 o'clock on Thursday. Before they left for the airport, and I was going separate from the team to get to the airport. I was flying with the team, but going separate from the team to get to the airport. Before they were scheduled to leave for the airport, we got word that the flight was delayed. So that pushed back the time to depart and go to the airport. By an hour, maybe it might even been 2 hours. We got to the airport, checked in, checked bags, went through security, and sat. Our plane was coming from Atlanta, and because of weather between Atlanta and Tallahassee, it wasn't able to ever leave Atlanta. So after sitting there for about 3 hours, we got word that our flight had been canceled. And it's not, you know, when you're flying somewhere and your flight gets canceled, the airline does whatever they can to accommodate you and get you on another flight. But when you're in a party of 45 to 50 people, it's not that easy to just move everybody to a different flight. And I know one of the alternatives Delta came up with was to send us to Panama City and by bus and get a flight from there on Thursday night to Atlanta, spend the night in Atlanta, and then they would put us on a plane of our own to send us directly to Pittsburgh. And at that time, Link said, well, why don't you just send the plane that you, if you're going to have a plane just for us, send that plane from Atlanta just down here to pick us up instead of us having to go to Panama City and then fly to Atlanta and then spend the night. Just have it come here Friday morning and we'll get on the plane here. And Delta agreed to do that. And then in the middle of all of that planning, the time to leave Hauser and head to the airport was right when that storm was coming through, right when the tornadoes hit. And it was a pretty harrowing event for everybody involved. And we got to the airport, and I don't think you can really process it while we're sitting at the airport waiting on our plane to get there from Atlanta again on Friday. We're starting to get pictures and you're starting to see what went on. And we hear, oh my gosh, it was actually a tornado that went through. And this is after it took them 50 minutes to get from Hauser to the airport. That's a 15, 20 minute drive on the heaviest of traffic days. And it took 50 minutes because they had to reroute and stop and go back and backtrack and do all this in that weather. And it was just really, I can't even imagine experiencing that while sitting on a bus. I drove it and it was scary enough for me. So we ended up, and then our flight gets delayed again because of the weather here. So we ended up landing in Pittsburgh after 12 noon. By the time we got our luggage and got on the bus and got to the airport, it was probably 1:30, 2 o'clock. And then we were leaving for 3:30 to go to the ballpark for batting practice. So they really, after all of that, only had about an hour and 15 minutes to sit and kind of relax a little bit. and get ready for a ball game. And you know, we know we went out there and lost 1-0, and Jamie Arnold pitched amazing and struck out 17 batters and all of that. It was a lot. And I've never experienced travel quite like that. I've never traveled the day of a game on a flight. Typically midweeks, you know, we might hop on the bus and drive to Jacksonville or drive to Gainesville and get off the bus and after a couple of hours and play baseball. But traveling for a 3-game series in a city far away and getting on a plane and all that that entails, we hadn't had travel quite like that at all. So that was really something.
Yeah, it just seems like the cherry on top of all the crazy things that's happened to this team this year. And with everything that's transpired, all the some of the injuries they've dealt with on the mound and some of those things with delays and trips. And at this point, being 37-13, I think Ari and I were just talking and we said if you had told us they'd be at that point that right now at this point of the year, we'd be probably jumping for joy. But coming off of the Pitt series loss and then the Stetson loss, just where do you feel like this team's at right now going into the final the weekend series of the regular season?
Well, and I'll kind of piggyback on that a little bit. I would say that had you started the season off, coming off of the year that we had last year, had you started the season off and said, hey, you know what, be 37-13 after 50 games, I think everybody would have been pretty pleased with that.
Yeah.
Without talking about the, you know, injury to Gavin Adams and the surgery that Jacob Marlowe had to have and the injury to Connor Whitaker and to Cam Leiter and to Ben Barrett. So throwing all of those things on top of that and still being where we are, I think is a testament to what this coaching staff has done. It's a testament to what this team has done in preparing, getting ready and getting out there and executing. So yeah, this week wasn't the crispest of baseball, crispest, most crisp of baseball to be played out there. But they've got an opportunity still, I think, to go out there. And if they can take care of business against Georgia Tech, you know, I think Baseball America's projection still had Florida State in the mix for one of the top 8 national seeds. So the opportunity is still there for what you're trying to get done way back when you start this season off. So to have all of those things happen, to still be in position to where you can be one of those top 8 national seeds, I think is really something. And, you've got to go out there and do it against a Georgia Tech team that can really, really swing the bats.
Yeah.
When you look at the pitching numbers, they may not impress you. I don't know that really matters because that's a team that went out there. I believe they had, I believe they played Virginia on the road, if I'm not mistaken. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Took a series on the road against Virginia and had 47 hits in 3 games, I believe was the total.
Right.
It was either 42 or 47. I think it was 47 hits in 3 games against the University of Virginia. So this is a team that can really, really swing the bats. And, Florida State's going to have to go out there and execute and be at their best. And I think you take 2 out of 3, you make a pretty good statement for the committee when they convene a little over a week after that.
You mentioned the outing from Jamie when you were talking about the trip to Pitt. Just when's the last time you can remember watching a pitcher being that dominant in a game? You've called and just how special has Jamie's full workload been this season?
I haven't called a game like that out of a pitcher. Tyler Chambliss was the last one to strike out 15. That was 2006. That was the year before I started doing games on the radio. Steve Molesky was the radio guy in 2006 when Chambliss had that game. I was a freshman in college when Richie Lewis struck out 20 in a game in 1987, the last time an FSU pitcher struck out 17 or more. And do I remember Richie Lewis striking out 20? No, I don't remember that game. I went to games all the time, but I don't specifically remember that. But as far as calling a game and just watching a guy do what Jamie Arnold did, that was really special. And he's, you know, when you go back to the fall, I think you started to hear people throw around first round draft pick about Jamie Arnold, and people were thinking back to freshman Jamie Arnold and kind of raising an eyebrow like, what?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you watch that kid operate out there, and he gets, there's such a big difference in his demeanor, in the confidence level, in the body language, all of those things with Arnold. And he gets this, he gets into this rhythm, and it's really, really fun to watch him when he's in that, when he's in that rhythm. And he was in that on Friday at Pitt. He's there's like a, I don't know how to explain it. There's like a, there's a rhythm to everything he does. There's a start to the wind up, and there's a little bounce in the shoulders, and it's repeated, and you see that same thing. And he's getting the ball. The 20-second pitch clock is starting. It's getting out of his hand at like 17, and it's so fun to watch when he gets in that zone. And he was certainly in that.
Yeah, and Tibbs, I think he moved up to seventh or sixth in the program yesterday with 50 career home runs. Just this year he's had, and the consistency he's had over the past 3 years, along with Jaime in the lineup, just Tibbs, his left-handed bat. I know there was Nelly a couple years back this season he put together with 20-plus homers, but just the consistency that Tibbs has shown offensively, just, I guess, when's the last time that this program has had a player as impactful and consistent as he's been for the program?
Well, I will say this, as far as the season he's had offensively, this is a completely different bat that he's swinging compared to what Buster Posey got to swing mm-hmm. in 2008.
Right.
And Buster hit, I think, 463 and 26 home runs, I believe, if I'm remembering that correctly. This is a completely different bat that he's using. It's really, really tough to reproduce those kind of numbers
yeah.
that Buster had in 2008 with the BB Corps bats, and yet he's done that. And he's done that in arguably, you know, I would make a case that the pitching is a lot better now, at least at the high end. The pitching is better now than it was back in the mid 2000s, back in, you know, the 06, 07, 08, 09 and 10 era, when you had a 40 or 50 round draft, as opposed to the 20 round draft that we have now. I think fewer arms were slipping through and getting into the college level. More arms were getting to the pro level. Those guys that just came out and threw really hard. Look, I know they measure pitches different nowadays, all that kind of stuff, but I'm doing the eye test, and we didn't have so many guys with the velocity that we have now. And I've had this discussion with Chris Chavez, and he's like, oh, no. Yeah, but 95 now isn't the same as 95 in 2008. That's fine. I was standing with Brian Cox, a guy who hit 19 home runs for Florida State, and he was watching Cam Leiter pitch in the preseason, and he looked at me and he said, I'm not fighting anybody at the bat rack to face that. And so again, it's an eye test thing that you get with that. So I would make an argument that at least on the top end, you're facing better pitchers now. You're facing more velocity. You're facing more refined stuff thanks to all of the technology that we have and pitching labs and all of those things and TrackMan and spin rate and. I think the coaches and the pitchers have so much more to work with
right.
that there's better top end stuff now. So I think all of those things, when you factor that in, it's really something the season he's had. And when you also look at one thing that he's done, he's cut down so much on the strikeouts.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, had you told me last year or as a freshman that James Tibbs would be, you know, one of the 50 toughest guys in the country to strike out. I mean, I would have raised an eyebrow and wondered what was going on, because that's not the profile that he is as a hitter, the guy that hits a lot of home runs, drives in a lot of runs, walks a lot. You kind of expect that guy to be a guy that's going to go up there and strike out a lot too, because he's free swinging. And he's refined his approach and become such a complete hitter that he's a tough out, but he's a tough strikeout too, which means he's putting the ball in play. He's giving the guys on base in front of him opportunities to score every time he gets up there. And it's really been fun to watch Tibbs and what he's become as a hitter.
Yeah.
And that's not even talking about what he's become defensively.
Mm.
I mean, look at the outfield assists for that guy this year. Some of the throws, that throw he made to third base a couple games back, that was ridiculous. You don't throw a ball from right field right on the glove to where the third baseman doesn't have to move it to tag a guy out. That's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. That throw was probably as good as it possibly gets. Lulu, last question for you. This is year 18 for you, I think, right?
Yep.
Just getting to do this job, I guess, just what is your favorite part of the job and the thing that you cherish most that you get to experience from it?
I've always been, I played football in college, but I played baseball in high school. Baseball's always been my favorite sport. I love being around baseball. I love getting the chance to see these kids come in as freshmen, leave as juniors or seniors, what they've become, how they've progressed, how they've improved, how they've matured, getting to know their parents, getting to know the families, all of those things. And it really, it did get a little bit harder after COVID because, there was a time in there when I wasn't really able to be as close to it as I normally would like to. So that has gotten a little tougher, that part of it. But, I'm standing there on Saturday after we got delayed at Pitt, and I'm talking to James Tibbs and talking to his dad, and, we're just hanging out, and we start playing on Sunday, and his dad comes by and checks on me. Hey, let me know if you need anything. It's Reese Albert's mom and dad texting me when they come to town because, hey, let's go out and get dinner. And it's all of that kind of stuff. I really enjoy that part of it. When you play a sport and you compete and you're a part of that, there's a certain part of that gets inside of you. And once it's done, it's hard to replace that. And for me, this kind of replaces that a little bit, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of replaces that competing part of it as a player, where I still get to be a part of it and watch these guys go out and compete. And whatever little bit of that I'm providing, that I'm a part of, I'm still a part of it. And that's something that keeps me going to the park every day. And I love baseball. So, how awful is it that I have to go to the ballpark and talk about baseball all the time?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure everybody that listens to this loves listening to you talk about it. And you're probably one of their favorite parts of FSU baseball. So thanks a ton for taking the time to talk today, Lulu, and joining the pod again.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Thanks again to Lulu for joining us, Eric Lowell, the voice of Florida State baseball, presented by Alumni Hall. That interview, they want you to know that the ultimate FSU shopping experience is at Alumni Hall, and you can get top brands like Nike, Champion, Columbia, Comfort Colors, Johnny O, Honor Reserve, Southern Tide, New Era, Yeti, and more. Alumni Hall has the seminal gear for all people, including your entire family, friends, extended family, as well as accessories and gifts. Students, faculty, and military, you guys all get 10% with your ID by shopping in-store. They have a new location right now over on Timberland Road near First Watch and REI over there in Market Square. So you can also shop anytime online at alumnihall.com. And if you use the code SG15 online, you'll get 15% from your cart. And so that's a special Sunday Golds ticket. If you go in the store, please let them know that Sunday Gold sent you as well to get your Seminole gear with the Noles returning back to Hauser. Brett, Lulu, incredible. Great perspective. A good dude. Someone who meant a lot to me in my broadcast career as I was coming up in the industry and being able to shadow him when I was in college and kind of go sit in on the booth. Noles are lucky to have a great voice like Eric.
Yeah, and always love talking with Lulu and texting with Lulu Dern and before and after the games about what's going on with the team. And we watched some scrimmages together in the fall and preseason too. So always appreciate Lulu's perspective and him coming on here and talking to us when he gets the chance.
Switching gears, Brett, to Georgia Tech. They're 30-19 on the year, trending upwards after a series victory against Duke. They won 2 out of 3 in Atlanta. That's a good lineup, you know, and obviously Drew Burris is going to maybe catch all the headlines, and he's probably your national freshman of the year. If he's not the top name, he's in the top three. He doesn't stand very tall. He's about 5'8", 5'9", with incredible swing, doesn't miss the in the zone, contact rates. He's the full package, and he's just a freshman. And so I think that's one of the stars of this college baseball game going forward. And Tech has had some really good ones throughout the years, right? Some really star hitters. But that's a lineup that they went in into the portal, and they really replenished. Got guys to come in from Indiana and Wofford and you know, Fairfield and all these different places that they were able to go in. NC State with Peyton Green. But Danny Hall, the Jackets have always been known to hit, and they're doing it again this year with power and depth throughout that lineup.
Yeah, this is a really, really good lineup, and one of the teams that's produced the most in conference play. In conference play, Georgia Tech only trails Virginia with a 308 average. It's only 0.02 behind Virginia. I think they've scored the third most runs in the league, and they strike out the second least while walking, I want to say, the second most. So they do a lot of stuff well. They also have stolen 65 stolen bases this year, have 85 home runs, led by Burris's 21 home runs. Peyton Green, who's an NC State transfer, I believe, has 12 home runs as well, and Matthew Ellis adds 15 homers. So they have seven guys in the lineup that are qualified, hitting over 300 this year, and pretty much everybody up and down has an OBP well into the 400s. Burris has an OBP into the 500s. For a freshman, for him to be hitting with that much power while also drawing the walks, he is compared to strikeouts. He's got 47 walks to 33 strikeouts, so 14 more walks than Kays this year. Just a lot of stuff really impressive about him. And Cam Jones, I think, is another transfer for them that's hitting 300 plus. He's hitting 335. So you just look up and down this lineup. It's a really deep lineup, a really good lineup, a lineup coached by James Ramsey, former Knoll, that's doing a really good job there with their offense and the approach that they take. I mean, they have almost as many walks as strikeouts as a team this year. So it's just going to be a tough matchup for Florida State's pitching staff this weekend.
Without a doubt, man. They've been playing well. They've got series wins against Duke, like I mentioned. They won 3 against NC State, went to Virginia, and won 2 out of 3 there as well. So it's a group that's capable. They rely on the offense. They rely on their ability to win games by scoring runs. And so at Hauser, you know, if the fence, you know, with it being a little bit lower, it could play a smaller park than even normal, you might have to win some shootouts. Georgia Tech does field at a 980 clip, Brett, and a good defensive team. However, their team ERA is really poor, and they're actually worse than Pitt ERA wise. So that's a group that has not been able to shut down many opposing teams. They've, like we said, won a lot of crooked number type of games and sometimes scores that really replicate football scores, but that's kind of their game. And the three guys that they had been going with and Aiden Finitari on Fridays, Cam Jones and Tate McKee, three different guys. I believe all three are righties. I got to double check. I'm calling the games this weekend, so I better be on my A game. But those are the three that they had gone with recently. And all three guys' numbers, nothing's going to jump out at the page at you. And you kind of hope that FSU has some success offensively playing in its own park this weekend.
Yeah, Jones is a two-way. He's a right-handed hitter, but a left-handed pitcher.
Okay.
But he has a 5.04 ERA this year in 50 innings, and he 239 average against, only 38 strikeouts in 50 innings, but also only 18 walks. So someone that's going to be in the zone and not miss too many bats. Aiden Finitari has struggled this year with home runs. He's allowed 14 home runs and 13 starts, has a 5.89 ERA, 3.08 average against in 62 and two thirds. Tate McKee, 6.86 ERA in 40 and two thirds. The conference ERA for Georgia Tech is 7.13. They've allowed a lot of home runs this year. 50 home runs they've allowed is the third most in the league. But they have a pretty small park themselves at home. We've been there a couple times, and every time we go there, it feels like the ball is flying out of that yard. Yeah, it's a gettable pitching staff like Pitt was last weekend. didn't fully take advantage of that in the first couple games, but you have another chance this weekend back at home to do some damage, I think. But you're going to have to do damage to keep up with that Georgia Tech lineup, I think. So it should be a challenging weekend for this team, I think.
Yeah, Georgia Tech, 14 and 13 in the ACC as well. RPI of 48, so top 50 in the RPI. And Brett, you're at 9 in the RPI yourself, right? You're right in the thick of the race to get a top 8. You need a good weekend at home. FSU, I think, can solidify a top 4 seed in the ACC tournament as well if they play well this weekend. So those are the things we're keeping our eye on. Anything else that you want to add before we sign off here on this episode?
Yeah, on the top four thing, if you were to sweep this weekend, you would be top four. If you were to win two or three, you need a couple teams to not sweep. I think the teams you would need to not sweep are, who are they? Wake Forest, I believe. Wake Forest and NC State, they play each other this weekend, I think. So you just need one of those teams to not sweep that series for them to not jump over you. NC State is also 15-11 in the conference right now on the ACC website. And then Virginia, Duke, Wake Forest are all 15-12. So you can't have those teams sweep if you were to go 2-1 this weekend. But I think that's mostly, I think outside of that, if you were to lose the series, then you obviously open up the door to some teams passing you. But if you win the series, just can't have teams behind you pull out sweeps. And if you sweep, then you're one of the top four teams.
So a lot to look forward to this weekend at Hauser. Hope you guys come out, support the team, good crowds. And I know the community is looking for something to rally around here after the tough week that they had last week with the storm. So Brett, good stuff from you as always. I want to thank Eric Llewellyn for joining our show here, Voice of the Noles. And thanks to Alumni Hall for being a friend here of the program. If you could give us 5 stars on Apple Pods, on Spotify, leave us a review and a comment, share this with your friends. It would mean the world to us. And, you know, the vibe of the last couple podcasts, not as fun as they have been. And hopefully when we come back next week, we'll have some more to talk about as Brett and I travel to Charlotte for the ACC tournament. But Brett, appreciate you, man. Get home back to Tallahassee safe and get to Hauser. See you there very soon. And believe we got 7 o'clock on Thursday. First pitch got moved to 7 p.m., 6 p.m. on Friday, and 2 p.m. on Saturday. I'm on the call for those with Chris Chavez. So it'll be fun to be able to talk to you guys through your TV sets and hopefully back here again next week with a Seminole series victory. For Brett Nabbitt, I'm Ari Masoudi. This has been Sunday Golds.